Hello and welcome to the Money Talk podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, after a tough year for income hunters, are UK dividends at last in line for a recovery? We'll take a look. And then what does the doubling of the copper price tell us about a potential commodities super cycle? We'll explain. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. They are the mainstay of many a portfolio, so deep cuts to UK dividends in the past year have been particularly difficult for ordinary investors to bear. COVID-19 caused whole industries to batten down the hatches, and dividends were often the first casualty of that. But as the outlook for the pandemic and the wider economy has improved, so have the prospects for shareholder payments as well. To discuss it more, I'm joined by Tom Stevenson, Investment Director here at Fidelity. Tom, welcome along.
Hi there, Ed.
Now, ahead of talking today, I was reading a report. It was from Link, which is the investor services group, and it said that dividends from the UK stock market were almost 27% lower in the first 3 months to March than a year ago, Tom. But that itself is up quite significantly because they were down as much as 47% last June. In other words, dividends are recovering quite quickly, but they're still some way off where they were, Tom. Does that make it a good time to be looking for dividends?
Yes. So I was reading a piece that that our colleague Graham Smith had written recently about dividends, and he came up with a slightly different figure, actually 38%. But I think that was for a calendar year. So that actually chimes with the two figures you've got there. I mean, and what it suggests is that the dividend situation is getting progressively better, and from a very low point early on in the pandemic last year, when obviously plenty of companies did cut their dividends. So, you know, is this a good time to be looking for dividends? I think it's always a good time to be looking for dividends, actually, and that's particularly the case in the UK, which is a relatively high dividend paying market. It's a high yielding market, and that's a good thing for long term investors, because dividends represent a big contribution to the total returns from investing in shares, albeit that they do go up and down in unusual situations like the pandemic. Generally speaking, the payment of dividends is more stable than the capital gains that you get from the ups and downs of share prices in the market. And so compounded up year after year, a high and sustainable dividend yield can be a really useful contribution to your total returns. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of dividend paying stocks.
And let's put the past year into more context. I mean, you mentioned there that the UK is historically a high paying market. Part of the reason for that is that it's got certain industries here which have developed into very mature industries and industries which have paid out lots of dividends. Oil is a big part of that, and so are banks. And so I just wanted to talk about those two sectors in particular, Tom. We saw big cuts from the two oil majors, Shell and BP, and that was always bound to have a very significant impact. I think Shell was something like a two-thirds cut and BP was like halving its dividend. Now, Shell has returned to paying or to raising its dividend again, but still nowhere near to where it was. BP hasn't done that, but its earnings have been improving as well. If you take a look at the banks, I mean, last year, Tom, they were told, weren't they, to cut their dividends by regulators, and they haven't really reinstated those yet, although I think Barclays is paying a small regular dividend. Now, the results from banks as well have been looking quite strong, and the authorities are going to look again at that guidance on dividends soon. So we could see a return of dividend paying from banks as well. I mean, if you're buying now into those kind of sectors, you would be forgiven, wouldn't you, Tom, for feeling quite confident that dividends can improve from where they have been and where they are right now?
Yeah, and I think you'd be right to think that, because it's hard to imagine a set of circumstances in which dividends would be under greater pressure than they have been over the past year. And, you know, just look at the oil sector that you mentioned there. The oil price was extremely low a year ago and has recovered strongly. And I think, you know, you can make quite a good case for the oil price going up further from here. So, you know, while you may look at the long term outlook for oil companies and there are some question marks over it. You know, I think in the medium term, I think that the prospect of oil companies being able to pay reasonable dividends is strong. I think the same is true of banks as the economy recovers from the pandemic. I think that the reserves that banks are having to set aside for bad loans are going to start to be rolled back into their accounts, and I think that they're financially in a much stronger position than they were. And what we've seen, of course, is that share prices have reset to reflect the fall in dividends last year. So, I mean, you mentioned BP there. I think last time I looked, BP was yielding around 6%. So, I think that the market has reset itself to the new reality of dividends. I think the prospect of dividends increasing from here is good. And so therefore, it does feel like a good time to be looking at dividend investing again.
Yeah. And finally, on this subject, Tom, a word, if we can, on how investors could play this. Clearly, equity income funds could have a role. I mean, that's their express purpose, isn't it, Tom, of finding sustainable and growing and high levels of dividend income. And I guess if you're more confident about picking stocks for yourself, as you hint at there, there's plenty of large UK companies paying healthy yields right now, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And both of those are perfectly legitimate ways to play the dividend theme, if you like. I mean, I think equity income funds have been incredibly out of favour for a long time, and there have been some sort of some other reasons to do with, you know, funds which have performed extremely badly that we'll all be familiar with. But generally speaking, you can find equity income funds now paying out, you know, between 3.5% and 5%. Income, which in a low interest rate environment is very attractive. And of course, you get the benefit of diversification with a fund. Looking at the individual stocks themselves, I was having, before we spoke, I just went and had a look at a listing of dividend yields in the FTSE 100. There are still quite a lot of FTSE 100 companies that don't pay a dividend, and that drags the average down. And so what that means, of course, is that at the other end of the scale, there are, you know, a good selection of companies that are paying dividends of 5% or more. And so I think, you know, it's not particularly difficult to put together a pretty well diversified portfolio of pretty secure companies that are paying high and what look like pretty sustainable dividends.
Yeah, and just before we move on, Tom, I mean, just a word on those yield figures. I mean, we should always say the performance of investments and the income you get from them is not guaranteed. And that's what that means, doesn't it? It means that dividends can be cut or removed completely. The yield figure you'll typically see relates to the income paid in the last year relative to the share price. Now, if that income isn't repeated, you're not going to get that yield. That's important to say, isn't it?
It is important to say. And of course, you know, the experience of the past year has demonstrated that, you know, as clearly as you could hope to demonstrate it. And of course, you know, I talked before about the market resetting itself to the new reality of dividends. If a dividend is cut and the dividend is the principal reason for people investing in that stock, then you are going to see a big reset of the price. So, you know, this is not without risk. And it's worth bearing in mind that when a dividend yield looks high, and looks attractive, there may well be a reason for that. You know, the market may be doing that resetting process ahead of time. It may be saying, look, I don't quite trust that dividend being paid into the future, so therefore I'm going to reset the price in anticipation of a cut. So be careful with apparently high dividends. They may be telling you something that you don't want to hear.
Okay. Well, let's leave that there, Tom, for now, because I also wanted to turn today to commodities. And the prospect, Tom, of a super cycle in commodities. Now, you've written about this in the past week, prompted by what's been happening with one particular commodity, which is copper. So why don't you tell us, Tom, what has been happening with copper?
Yes, well, it's quite a simple story, really. The price has been going up, and it's been going up quite a lot. I mean, a year ago, you could have bought a ton of copper for $4,300. Last week, the price of copper went through $10,000. So it's more than doubled in just over a year. And it's actually pretty close. It's not quite at an all-time high because the commodities sector generally underwent a big boom in prices in the early years of this century, and in 2011 peaked out. The copper price is now, you know, within a whisker of its previous 2011 peak. So there's a lot of interest in copper. There's a lot of interest in other metals as well. Iron ore has been very strong. Zinc has been, lots of metals have gone up quite a lot over the last year. And I'm sure we can talk about the reasons for that.
Well, yes, exactly. I mean, because copper, as you say, that's just sort of one commodity. People might be listening to this and wondering exactly what relation that has to their investing sort of world, if I can put it that way. But of course, as you hint at there, it suggests something is going on in the economy, in the global economy, in terms of growth and demand for these things. It tends to tell a deeper story. It feeds into this narrative that we're heading into a super cycle for commodities, Tom. And that's a term, it only ever seems to be used in connection with commodities. It's a bit like schisms. Schisms only ever happen in the church, don't they? In my experience. But what does it mean exactly, this super cycle pattern? And what is the evidence for it happening right now?
Yes, well, it's an interesting point, actually, that to distinguish between a regular run of the mill cycle and a super cycle, because commodities are like most parts of the economy are cyclical in nature. They go up and down according to the level of activity. I think commodities are probably more cyclical than most assets, because they absolutely reflect the balance between supply and demand, you know, in the here and now today. So obviously that moves around quite a lot. So I think that you can make a short-term case for there being a good market, a bull market in commodities, because the global economy is picking up. There's more activity, there's more demand in the short term for metals like copper. A super cycle is a bit different. A super cycle it refers to an extended period, maybe over many years or even decades, of rising prices. And the reason why you get a super cycle is because you get a fundamental disconnect in the relationship between demand and supply. Demand rises consistently over a long period of time. And in order for that to happen, you need some kind of sort of fundamental shift in the global economy. And there aren't many of them, but over the last 100 years or so, there've probably been three or four. The ones I highlighted in the piece that I was writing about were, first of all, the industrialization of America at the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century. That had a big impact on commodity prices, as too did the recovery after the Second World War in Europe and Japan, as did at the beginning of the current century, the integration of China into the global economy, and effectively millions of Chinese citizens being dragged out of poverty and into the sort of consuming middle class. So these are big changes in the global economy, and they have long-term impacts on commodity prices, which, let's not forget, commodities are the sort of fundamental building blocks of the economy. Metals, energy, oil, agricultural commodities to a lesser extent. So I think, you know, if we're looking at the possibility of a super cycle now, then we have to ask ourselves, what is the trigger for that super cycle to happen. And I think the narrative that everyone is looking at the moment is the decarbonisation of the global economy. A big factor in the fiscal stimulus in America, for example, is the rebuilding of the energy generation sector and the transport sector, electric cars, wind power, solar power, and all of these changes have big implications for commodities because, for example, copper, and this is why copper is in focus at the moment, is a big feature of wind turbines. It's a big feature of electric cars. And so I've seen some figures saying that the expectation is that demand for copper could double over the next 30 years. In the absence of a big increase in supply, that's going to have an enormous impact on the price of copper.
Yeah, it can be a compelling story. But finally on this, Tom, I mean, anyone thinking about investing in commodities has, they've got a few options to do it, haven't they? There's ETFs, exchange traded funds that you can buy, which will either replicate the price of a commodity like copper or will physically hold it. You can buy shares in companies or funds that buy shares in mining companies. It's important to say, though, I guess, that as an investment, these things come certainly with some volatility, don't they? There's some sort of arguments to be said about, you know, whether these are sort of productive assets, a bit like the argument that you have around gold, I suppose. What is the argument that someone should be holding these in a portfolio and that what kind of proportion should they be holding them in?
Yeah, well, I mean, a few different questions there. I mean, in terms of volatility, I think that, you know, you mentioned the exchange traded funds, which basically track the price of the underlying commodity versus the shares of companies that dig these metals out of the ground, for example, or you know, source the oil, and they do behave differently. Obviously, there's volatility with the underlying asset price. So if you buy an ETF, then that's the risk that you face. But if you invest in a share, then obviously you have an equity market risk as well. So if the equity market were to fall, then you would expect the shares of companies like Rio Tinto and BHP Billiton to also fall, regardless of what was going on in the commodity market. There is an advantage, though, in investing in the shares of a company, and that is that, you know, broadly speaking, a mining company has relatively fixed costs. And in that context, if there is a rise in the price of the underlying asset that they sell, then the profits of that company will probably rise disproportionately more. So if you're confident that the price of underlying commodities is rising, then possibly a better way of investing is through the shares of the mining companies rather than in the underlying assets. You mentioned one other question there, which was, you know, the proportion of commodities that anyone should have in their portfolio. I mean, this is a volatile area. We mentioned the cyclicality of commodities. You probably don't want to have an enormous exposure within your portfolio. But I absolutely, at the moment, given what I've said about the possibility of a super cycle or even just a shorter term upward cycle in prices, then I think you probably want to be a bit more invested in commodities than you might be at other points in the cycle.
Okay. Well, Tom, that is it for now. Thanks an awful lot for joining me.
Thanks a lot, Ed.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week. Please be aware that the value of investments and the income you get from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information doesn't constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Eligibility to invest in an ISA or a pension and the value of tax savings depends on personal circumstances, and all tax rules may change. You will not normally be able to access money held in a pension until the age of 55. reference to specific securities or funds should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities or funds, and is included for the purpose of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you're unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor.